The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Mentioned that just because you hear a strategy or two on this show or see it on a website, etc., don't rush in to dive to the end of the pool. Let's check with your current advisors and make sure that you heard what you thought you heard and it actually does fit your personal current facts and circumstances. And if you don't have current or advisors currently that understand real estate, private partnership syndications, or real estate taxation, or retirement plan planning and taxation, then by all means feel welcome to go to our website at beaplannershow.com. That's BEAPLANNER show, SHOW.com. And complete the, if you'll go to the forms link, which is top right of that page, you'll be able to complete our intake forms. If you'll do even just the first one, step one, I'll be happy to spend some time with you on a phone call, and let's make sure that we can, or if we can help you sync up with your goals and objectives. Okay, boy, a lot's happened since we last talked. I didn't really get much into the State of the Union details on the Friday show that we had, but I tell you, there's more taxes are a-coming if the current group get back into power. Let's hope they don't, but they're not satisfied with the rate of taxes now, especially on the corporate front. That's where it all starts, because, you know, corporations are wealthy, right? They don't have a problem paying higher tax. Why? Because they're going to pass it on to their customers, you and I, in most cases. So, you know, the powers that be don't seem to understand that, because they go after the corporate taxpayer more and more and more. And I tell you, it's amazing. And, you know, I guess I wouldn't be so opposed to the tax hikes if they would actually spend the money to pay down part of our existing debt. But, you know, it seems like every time they raise more money with more taxes, they simply decide they're going to spend more. It's like, oh, we've got more money to spend, and the reality is we've got a diminishing ability to borrow, and in fact it's likely going to be sometime in the 2028, 29, 2030 at the latest time frame. It's doubtful going to be as late as 2030 the way the interest rates are going on all the renewal of the treasury bonds that we have coming due, and it's not necessarily the renewal. It's the fact that bonds mature and then investors buy new bonds, and those new bonds are at a significantly higher interest rate. And for the first time in ever in our lifetime, in the history of the world, whatever metric you want to use to describe it, we will go over the $1 trillion mark in terms of interest expense this fiscal year. So the fiscal year ended September 2024. And that's just, it's crazy. I mean, there's just no other way to describe it. But in any event, as we've discussed many times, and we may have a chance here later in the show to bring it up again, Roth conversions is what you want to do with your retirement funds if you can. And most people can. And if you can't do it or don't think you can do it with your current retirement plan, check with me. Let me see. On a complimentary basis, I'm happy to review your summary plan description that you have from your 401k or other retirement. And I'll be happy to tell you whether or not there's a way forward to convert to Roth, because otherwise I think it's a safe bet that you're going to lose at least 50% of that balance that you have now. So if you've got a couple million dollars, you might at the end of the day, after you've paid the tax that'll be due when you start taking that money out, whether you want to or not, meaning that you may be under the required minimum distribution paradigm when you start taking funds. Who knows? I suspect, based on reading the tea leaves here and understanding the math, it is, after all, just math. I mean, people can act like and can say that, you know, it's very complicated. It's very complex understanding what the taxes might be down the road. And it's like, no, it's not. You know, you're looking at, just look at the information that's out there. The Congressional Budget Office, 15 years ago now, issued a report to Congress. Congress had requested to learn what do we need to do to fix the deficit that we're racking up year after year after year. And this was in 2009 when we, compared to what we have now, we barely had one. I mean, truthfully, it was, $9 trillion to $10 trillion. It was a lot less. Now we're sitting here at 34, almost 34 and a half as of this past Wednesday. And by the way, I'm on the resources page of our BA Planner Show website, where about the fourth article down in the current discussion section is a reference to the U.S. National Debt Tracker. That's an article that syncs up with the usdebtclock.org site that we talk about very often. And the national debt as of Wednesday was $34,440 billion plus dollars, so almost $34.5 trillion. And just in the last since Friday, what is that? Or since Wednesday? That's the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So 4 days. It's gone up at least another $50 billion. I think we're tracking at about $6 to $8 billion per day is what we're borrowing these days, if I remember correctly. But in any event, so when you look at what was proposed during the State of the Union, I believe I didn't watch much of the State of the Union, but this article I think stems from that. And effectively, the president is going to propose denying companies tax deductions for employees making more than $1 million. $1 million. And I know a lot of my listeners may say, well, you know, if they're making more than $1 million, they need to pay more tax. And yet I would say, well, not so fast. You know, if they're making it on an employee basis as a W-2, you have to understand that they're already paying significant FICA and Medicare taxes. And then, you know, income tax are more than likely in the highest bracket at 30. Well, call it 40-plus percent, because the Obamacare tax will catch somebody at that level. And, you know, I don't know. It also depends on where you live. I mean, for people that live in higher-cost areas like, you know, California or New York, et cetera, you know, you might have $500,000 left at the end of the day, and that's not necessarily wealthy in those markets. But in any event, you know, the plan that he has been talking about since the 2020 campaign and failed to get through Congress the last time, because of a couple senators, Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin, neither of which are apparently planning on running again. And so, you know, we might not be so lucky the next time. But anyway, they're looking at trying to boost the corporate tax rate up to 28%. And boosting the taxes on foreign profits. And that was from 2020. Now he's looking to add some new ideas on top of those for a second term were he to be re-elected. It would include raising a corporate minimum tax, which took effect this past year. We already have it, but it came in at 15%. They want to raise it to 21%. Boy, the ink's hardly dry on the new rule, and they're already trying to raise it. This is what happens, folks. And if you think they're stopping with corporate tax, you watch. They'll be coming back to the table. In 2020, they were going after individuals that made more than it was either 400 or 450, I can't remember which, a year. And, you know, that was kind of disguised. That would not have been the case if you were a small business. Let's say you had an S-Corp or you had an LLC. If you grossed more than that, they were counting you in that group that should have higher tax bill, regardless of what your minimum was. Or maybe the regs that would have come out would have provided some relief. But, you know, to them, wealthy is it's a very relative term. It's not very objective when it comes to the way it was defined. But anyway, bottom line, keep your eye. First of all, go vote. That'd be the first thing I would tell you. And then watch what happens, what shapes the go forward with regard to high earners and corporations. There's trillions of dollars, literally trillions of dollars at stake with respect to going forward. And boy, I tell you, if or when the tax acts get passed, the Congress is off to the races. Unfortunately, in terms of spending. And once those rules get baked in and you've got budgets getting expanded, et cetera, it's very hard to make those go back down lower. In any event, Biden wants to extend tax cuts, he says, for households making less than $400,000 a year, while raising taxes on corporations and high-income Americans and beefing up IRS enforcement. He says the 2017 law was an unfair giveaway to Americans who didn't need it and can pay more. Couple things there. I'm going to put that comment about wanting to extend tax cuts into the same category as the border is secure. Don't worry, border secure. It's a bunch of hogwash, essentially. There'll be no tax cuts for the lower to middle class. Not going to happen. And the other thing is the 2017 Tax Act, you can say what you want about who got the benefit. The amount of taxes collected by the U.S. government went up dramatically, but so did spending. We're now sitting on a 10-year plan. The 10-year deficit, according to CBO, Congressional Budget Office, this is the umpire that calls the balls and strikes of our federal budget and our spending, says that the average annual deficit over the next 10 years will be $2 trillion. It's going to go from $34 trillion now cumulative to $54 trillion. So I don't give you much hope for cutting anybody's taxes, okay? It can't happen, or we're going to be even worse shape than we're in now. Republicans, by contrast, say that the 2017 tax law that cut corporate and individual taxes was an economic success and warn of the impact if we reverse any of it. A recent academic study found that 2017 law boosted domestic investment but fell far short of paying for itself. Well, I'm not sure about that. I've read multiple studies that showed significantly larger collections. Republicans advocate extending the expiring tax cuts. These are the ones that expire. A number of provisions will expire 112026, and they're wanting to extend those expiration dates and claw back the IRS enforcement funding, which I've forgotten how much has been clawed back, but they started doing a bit of that when we were working with the debt ceiling issue this past, what was it, September, I believe. Mr. Trump hasn't articulated a clear tax plan as of yet, though he has talked about imposing higher tariffs on imported goods. Well, you know, we can argue with that as well. I mean, again, who pays the net impact of tariffs? Or tariffs, it's usually those that are buying the imported goods. So I don't know. It's a sad state of affairs, has been for a while, and until we own up to it and we change our policies on what we're going to spend money on with our government, it's only going to get worse. But in any event, let's see. We just passed our break about 5 minutes. Let's go ahead and take our first break, and we will circle back shortly with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to know.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, Do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I want to direct your attention for the moment to our videos page on the BeAPlannerShow.com site. And I've got a relatively new video. It's been out a couple months, actually, that provides information on what might become the new rules for defining who is an accredited investor. And we talked about this some on this past Friday's show, and I wanted to give a little bit more information on why this matters. If you're looking to invest in real estate private partnership syndications, you may find that you will not be able to qualify to invest in some of the offerings if these changes, which were given as considerations by SEC staff. The SEC staff do what they refer to as staff reviews. I believe, according to the latest congressional mandates, they're supposed to do them no longer than every 4 years. And so the definition of an accredited investor is contained within Regulation D in the SEC statute or crowdfunding statute, and that is one of the areas that's, according to Congress, is up for their every 4 year or not more than 4 year review. In any event, right now, and there are two different types of private partnership syndication offerings, or two most common, I guess I should say, are those that are offered under the Section 506B rule for investors. You can have up to 35 non-accredited investors, and then you can have an unlimited number of accredited. And I'll tell you what the specific terms mean here momentarily, but I just want to make sure you understand there's currently two different categories, and there will still continue to be two different categories. It's just the line is moving on who's accredited and who's not accredited. But in any event, the second type of offering is done under 506C, which is for the accredited investor. The current requirement, you can either qualify by having a certain level of net worth, which that number would be $1 million, not counting your primary residence, okay, your home. That number, if the new potential definition changes that are put out for consideration, will go up to 3 million should that change. At least if they change it in the fashion that the staff review was basing their assessment. They were simply saying, hey, Congress, or hey, Commission, you know, perhaps you consider adjusting that definition simply for inflation since the last time that the rule was set. And I've forgotten. I think it goes back to the 80s. It's an old rule at this point, or it's an old definition. But anyway, if you just consider adjusting for inflation, that'll push that net worth requirement up from 1 million to 3 million. So fewer people will fall into the accredited transaction. And that's important for a reason I'll mention here momentarily. Let me address the other two ways you can qualify. The other two ways involve income. If your individual income for three consecutive years is at least $200,000 under the current rules, you're deemed to be accredited. That number will go up to $607,000 should the commissioners decide to adjust it for inflation. The joint income threshold will increase from the current $300,000 level up to $911,000. And that's per annum for three straight years, with the understanding that it's going to continue in the current year if you're here now trying to invest. So there's some big changes there. And why does this matter? And here's why it matters. You know, we talk to new prospects all the time. And, of course, our existing clients, we have a good understanding of who's accredited and who's not accredited. But the various investment platforms that are available, some of which offer transactions to non-accredited investors. And most of them that do are very proud of that and tell you, make, you know, it a differentiating factor if you consider joining and paying their membership fee to join their platform. And I've touted it as a reason to join one of the platforms. You know, if you're looking in the Houston market, at least, or other markets around the country where Self-Made Millionaires platform has offices, then, you know, the nice thing about that platform is that they mandate, until here very recently, they mandated that every transaction offered for a private real estate partnership, typically involving apartments, although it seems like that's morphing now over into some bulk single family projects. But, you know, you had to do it. It was mandated that the syndicator offered under 506B, i.e., non-accredited, up to 35, might be able to participate. And again, 35 seems like a big number. It's really not. That's not that many, because to buy a, you know, a $50 million apartment building, you're going to need probably 150 to 200 investors. And so that really puts a crimp on the number that can be non-accredited. And so anyway, I think that I don't know that this rule will ever see a change, or at least in the near term. There was a similar proposal, or, well, again, these are not deemed as proposals. They're not deemed as recommendations. They're simply provided for consideration. But let's just say they were provided for consideration 2 to 3 years ago now. I've forgotten how long. I know it's been within that 2 to 3 year window. And the rule was exposed, potential change in the rule was exposed to the public, and SEC got a lot of pushback and decided, I suppose, not to pursue it. I'm not sure they'll be so fortunate this time around, or will be so fortunate. So I would say that if you're sitting on the fence thinking about investing in these transactions, and maybe you're sitting there with $1.5 million or $2 million in net worth, excluding your primary residence, you may want to make a decision to move forward if you can otherwise understand and feel comfortable with the other considerations involved. In any event, I think this will also lead to, just makes sense. We've been talking for a while now about the merits of small apartment building transactions versus the larger transactions. The fees that are being charged on larger transactions are becoming more and more egregious in my mind. In fact, I noticed even one syndicator, Grant Cardone, who I've mentioned on the air before, he's quite a colorful character, and I'm not at all suggesting that you run out and invest with Grant Cardone when I mention this. He's, I believe, changed his syndicator split, his promote piece that he takes for putting the deal together, back down to the classic 80-20 split that used to occur, and until the last couple of years when the promotes have scaled significantly up into the 30% range, and then once you get back a certain chunk of your capital, I've seen them scale as high as 50 to 60% for the remainder. So it's unbelievably dilutive, and that's D-I-L-U-T-I-V, dilutive, dilution, not delusion, although it is somewhat delusional to think that if you're in a transaction like that, your odds go up to get your capital back plus any kind of gain. No, they go down the more your capital is diluted. And in any event, and Cardone is a good example of why the promote or the override is just one thing you have to look at and understand. There's a lot of other issues that you need to understand. And I know in his case, he talks about a 10-year hold to basically double your money. Well, that's a long time to hold a multifamily property to see your money double. And I know, except here in the current year and a half that's taking place, we would see our investment double in 4.5 to 5 years in many cases in these transactions. Certainly not in all of them, but it happened more often than not. It was projected more often than not, whereas Cardone Capital, they project a 10-year hold and brag about doubling your money. And I'd say, hey, nothing to brag about. The tortoise may beat the hare in some cases in that scenario, but I would suggest to you, you look for transactions that'll get you there faster. Again, it's all pro forma information, but and then the other thing you got to look at is your syndicator's overhead and how much of that is being flushed through the partnership or partnerships that you're invested in. And I don't know. I'm not saying Cardone is egregious in that fashion. I'll just tell you, though, the guy buys $65 million jets and $42 million beach houses, and I'm not suggesting, again, that that's not righteous money. It may be, but it sure contradicts everything he's telling you and others about, I could go buy another apartment building for $40 million that would generate $600,000 a month in cash flow. I believe that's the right number he used on one video. bottom line is he doesn't always eat his own dog food, and that's his business. It's not for me to say. I'm just trying to help those that are looking to invest understand how to unravel and how to understand what you're signing up for and who you're signing up with. And if I know something, I'll do my best to explain that and help you understand again what you're signing up for. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our second break, and we'll be back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
And you are a teacher. You are a reacher, so reach down. Reach out and lead me. Guide me and keep me in the shelter of your care each day. Cause I am a seeker, and you are a keeper. You are a leader, won't you show me the way?
Welcome back to this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. I got caught up in an article I was getting ready to discuss. And if you go back to the news page on the BeAPlannerShow.com resources page on the site, we got a report. Friday's jobs report was significant again. And the headline kind of says it all, and we've talked about this even very recently. Strong job numbers might mean a longer wait for rate cuts. Well, you know, that's what I said on the last jobs report, I believe a month ago, and the expected new jobs was 198,000. With employment to stay at 3.7%. Instead, the number of new non-farm jobs was 275,000, and yet the unemployment rate rose to 3.9%, with the number of unemployment growing by 334,000 jobs. Jeez, that's a huge number, to 6.5 million. So the number of unemployed increased by more than the new jobs coming into the market. A year before, jobless rate was 3.6%, and number of unemployed was 6.0 million. In any event, you know, there's a lot of ways to translate this data, but I would suggest that the way the Fed talks about the jobs report, looks at these numbers, they're not going to be rushing to cut rates at all, because it would be, as we've said before, it'd be like throwing gasoline on a raging fire. So in any event, I don't know. It's going to be a matter of, I think, ongoing patience, and we'll see what develops, you know, later in the year. I'm suggesting late in the year, if at all, this year is what looks like could be happening. Let's see. There's I've got another article. This is just a quickie, and the only reason I bring it up is because it affects almost every one of the multifamily projects that, or it could affect almost every one of the multifamily projects that my clients have invested in. The FCC wants apartment residents to have the right to choose their broadband service partner and outlaw contracts in which landlords require their tenants to sign up to bulk billing arrangements. Under these arrangements, landlords insist that broadband, cable, and satellite, etc., provided by a specific communication provider or used within the apartment, even if the residents do not wish to take the service or would prefer to use another provider. The FCC proposal, if passed, would allow tenants to opt out of those bulk billing arrangements and would increase competition for communications service in these buildings by making it more profitable for competitive providers to deploy service in buildings where it's currently too expensive to serve consumers because tenants are required to take the current provider's service. It seems to me some of these government agencies have too much time on their hands, but that said, I guess we all have rights, right? And this is one that I had overlooked. I know most people at one point were happy just to be able to get cable and internet in their apartment, and now I guess we're getting complacent. And maybe there's been a number of complaints lodged, but anyway, that'll be interesting to see what develops there. Also, on the regulatory front, there's an article. We have not yet spoken, I don't believe, of this provision that's in the Corporate Transparency Act, but it's something that we'll talk more about as we get into the year. It's a new requirement that small businesses, and I mean even the smallest LLCs and partnerships and S-Corps, now have to comply with. It's a FinCEN requirement, which, I've forgotten what the acronym stands for, but it's a set of laws that have been in place for a while for those that have bank accounts and other assets outside the U.S. And you have to file an annual report with, I believe it's with IRS, but it's maintained by a separate section. So there's a different website than the IRS that you complete that filing and basically tell the government, this is how much money I have that's, held by a foreign bank or foreign whatever. Could be investment fund, could be a number of things. But in any event, this is like taking a bazooka out to kill a mosquito. And the requirements for not complying, for failing to file, are like $10,000 on up and jail time, not to mention the enormous burden compliance-wise of providing the information. And I know we filed these for some of our clients. I've filed personally because of my situation, living for the most part here overseas. And in any event, was the National Federation of Small Business or Chamber of Commerce, one of the small business groups challenged the law and went to court, and a federal judge on Friday, I guess it was this the past Friday? It was either this Friday or a week ago Friday, struck down this provision that would have forced many small businesses to disclose personal information or face penalties. This is, on the one hand, I understand the need to crack down on cheats, on people that are, using offshore mechanisms to avoid tax. On the other hand, to go after the level of small company that they're going after, this is hiding the fact that they're really wanting this information for other purposes. There's just no ands, if, or buts. You don't go after single member LLCs thinking that they've got billions of dollars stashed overseas. And if you do, you're not going to get many of them, okay, because they just don't exist. And it may be a well-intentioned provision designed to bring people back into compliance, but it just seems like it's misguided. And the original wall, when it first came out more than a few years ago, was designed to target the use of shell corporations. And again, that doesn't tend to be a small taxpayer mechanism. And in any event, we're going to watch this, because the court case only applies to someone that was, I guess, a member of the Independent Federation of Small Business. But keep an eye on that. And if you've got a small business, pay attention. You've got a filing obligation this year to disclose information, whether or not it's relevant or not. Seemingly, you've still got to file. And I'm thinking this rule is going to get modified, if not eliminated totally for the small taxpayer. But again, don't delay. If that, again, if you've got a small business, check with your accountants and get on board to get that taken care of. In any event, I was reading further in this article, and it would apply even to businesses, millions of businesses with fewer than 5 employees and less than $5 million in annual sales. It would apply down to that strata. And it's just absurd. But anyway, okay, let's see. We probably got time for maybe one more. Let's see. I know. I've got an article out here. Actually, it was from Friday, about ranking government debt by country. It's always interesting to see who else is in as bad or worse shape as the U.S., right? And there's a list here on this article. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's the G7. I guess there's 10 members now. On average, this is scary, on average, the top 10 are 128% in debt of their annual GDP, Japan being the first at 255% of their 2023 GDP. They've been over the $300% mark in years past, but they've continued to whittle it down. Good for them. Greece, who I know was in deep, deep trouble several years ago, they're at 168%, and I suppose that may be better than they were. Singapore, surprising to see their name on this list, they're at 168%. Italy is not a surprise. They're at 144% of GDP. The U.S. is 123% of our GDP. No surprise there. France is at 110%. Portugal's 108%. Spain's at 107%. Canada is 106%. And Belgium is 106% of GDP. And the comment at the top of that article is that for the top 20 economies, advanced economies, analyzed, 11 have a debt-to-GDP ratio of over 100%. I know in the past when we would contemplate new legislation, tax legislation, and reporters would ask congressmen or congresspeople what they thought about the legislation, would they support it? And they would always come back with, well, let's wait and see how CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, is going to score this legislation. And because, you know, frankly, we think as long as we're below, 60% or so of GDP, And that's when you should start to think, gee, that's been a long time ago. And, of course, they don't reference our percent of debt to GDP anymore. That's never one of the things they'll point to when they're talking about supporting or not supporting that. They're typically referring nowadays to, are the pay-fors sufficient to pay for it, meaning the provisions that raise tax receipts, the pay-fors, are they high enough to where it'll offset the cost of cutting taxes or whatever else is raising the cost? But in any event, and then second comment here at the top of the article is, at the top is Japan, whose national debt has remained above 100% of its GDP for two decades, reaching 255% in 2023. And I would suggest it was higher than that several years ago. I'm quite certain I saw multiple articles that pegged it at 300, closer to 350. So, in any event. Okay, well, let's see here. I am down to about a minute or so left. I'm just going to wrap up by saying, I'm going to mention again, Roth conversion needs to be on your radar. If you've got pre-tax retirement funds, get them over to Roth. Pay your conversion tax at the lowest rates in your lifetime, most of you that are listening in, and take advantage of being able to get converted at a lower cost than what it's going to cost you when you get out to 2029, 30, and beyond. It's just math, folks. And if you want someone to help you look at that, I'm happy to do so. You're more than welcome to go to our baplannershow.com website, click the forms link, fill out at least step one of those forms for me, and then at the link right next to the form links, the call link, go schedule a call, and we will spend a half hour or so on the phone and determine whether we can sync up or how we can sync up to help you achieve your goals and objectives, which one of them, I'm hoping, is to pay less tax as you get into retirement. And it's a, you know, it's no fun to pay tax now, but it's a lot more fun than getting hit with two times as much tax, which is what it's going to take if you look at the math. The CBO report 2009 suggested 150% increase in the tax brackets, and more recently that number's been pushed up to 200% because our borrowing has gotten much worse. Our cumulative deficit's gone from $9 trillion to almost $35 trillion, and that's not even the real deficit. The real deficit, if you throw in the unfunded mandates, is up in the $230 trillion range. So it's not good. But in any event, again, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back this coming Friday at 11 a.m. right here on the same station. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.